your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
A timber cruiser riding that away. Met a fierce and fearsome creature walking out one day. It was green with tusks and claws and spikes and horns on its head. I'll find a way to catch it live, was what Shep said.
I'll find a way to catch it live, was what Shep said.
Bill Beers at Forbes and Lakeshore, can he lend a hand? The druggist John Ritten brought chloroform as planned. They talked it out before they went, each one knew his part. When you go to catch a hodag, you have to be smart. When you go to catch a hodag, you have to be smart.
So come with me for a minute, if you will. Imagine a Northwoods lumber camp. It's fall. It's starting to get cold. The lumberjacks are getting ready for the winter season in camp. This is 1893, and there are hundreds of these logging camps across northern Wisconsin. Most of them are focused on harvesting white pine. And for the lumberjacks, this is a brutally hard job, a dangerous job. But the population of the United States is growing. The turn of the century is approaching. And this lumber is a big business. There are more than 23,000 people working in these camps in Wisconsin. The men running these companies, the lumbermen who are extracting this wood from the Northwoods, are getting very rich doing it. And at night, the lumberjacks gather around the campfire and they weave tall tales. They tell stories of improbable events and unbelievable creatures they've encountered in the deep woods. And one of these creatures is the horrible hodag. The story of the hodag, from its creation by a Northwoods lumberman to its adoption as Rhinelander's official mascot, is our topic today on Route 51. I'm Robert Menser. I'm living and storytelling editor for USA Today Network Wisconsin, filling in for Glenn Moberg. And I am joined by Carrie Bladorn, director of Rhinelander's Pioneer Park Historical Complex, and Keith Ulig, a reporter for USA Today Network, who wrote about the history of the hodag on its 125th birthday. Carrie and Keith, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Rob.
And you can join us, too. Call 800-780-9742 with your hodag questions. Now, let's get back to that lumber camp. These late 19th century lumberjacks, they've worked 12-hour, 15-hour days, and at night they're back, they're at the campfire to tell stories. One of the men is Eugene Shepherd, who does a job that is known as timber cruiser, and he has a tale of a fearsome creature that he personally has encountered. Carrie, tell us Eugene's story.
Well, you can imagine for a moment that Gene is strolling along a Northwoods trail through old-growth white pine trees along the banks of the mighty Wisconsin River, just north of Rhinelander along the headwaters of Rice Creek, a small tributary that flows into the Wisconsin River, and all of a sudden Gene stopped dead in his tracks. A horrendous odor assailed his nostrils, kind of skunk-like, musky. Up ahead on the trail, Gene noticed a pair of glowing eyes cross in front of him. Now, Gene had previously attempted to capture a beast that he had discovered in the woods. And during this initial capturing, the beast was blown up by dynamite. And therefore, Gene was out in the woods attempting to locate another specimen and thinks at this point that he had found another one. And Gene went along the trail a little bit further and he found some claw marks about 7 feet up on a white pine tree, a giant white pine tree. And a little farther down, he noticed a hole dug into the side of a hill, and Gene snuck up to the hole and he peeked inside, and this horrendous odor coming out of the hole, and Gene thinks he discovered another hodag. So he quickly came back to Rhinelander, went down to where all the lumberjacks hung out, called a place called the Hungry Hollow, known today in Rhinelander as the Hollow, and there were a lot of saloons, lumberjacks drinking establishments there, and he gathered up a lumberjack posse. Several of those lumberjacks were notable bear wrestlers. And then went back out to this hole north of town and proceeded to capture this creature.
Not just some of the less well-known bear wrestlers. They're notable ones.
So yeah. Well, there are a lot of bear wrestling lumberjacks in the late 1800s. But, yeah, these were strong guys.
So the thing about this story, I mean, we've hinted at it, is that this story is not true. The Hodag is Nessie, or the Niffler from Harry Potter, or Porgs from Star Wars. This is Gene Shepard's tall tale, first told around these campfires, and then for the first time ever in print, 125 years ago in October. Carrie, you've studied the Hodag. What do we know about where Shepard got this story, or how it might have come to be?
Well, Eugene Shepard being an early pioneer to the Northwoods of Wisconsin, having come from Green Bay and New London, spent a lot of time in the woods, spent a lot of time with Anishinaabe guides, Ojibwe guides, learning the lays of the land. And no doubt he spent countless nights around the campfire listening to their stories and legends. And the Native American peoples have a story about a creature they called Mishapishu. And it's also known as the underwater panther. And it has spikes along its back. And there's actually a pictograph on a rock near Lake Superior that shows this creature. And it looks like it could be an early reference to Gene Shepard's Hodag. So you could say that this is an evolvement of North American mythology that dates back possibly thousands of years.
So say a little bit about what was the job of a timber cruiser? Like, what was Gene Shepard's experience like in these Northwoods?
Suppose you had lumber companies that wanted to check out a particular piece of property. They would buy a lot from the government, and then they would send a timber cruiser out to this lot to investigate its potential for harvesting. And that's what Gene did. He spent a lot of time walking around the woods, speculating on timber, and also keeping a look on land. They're also called land lookers. Lumber companies didn't want other companies coming in and cutting their timber. So one of the things Gene did was visit all these lots out in the middle of the wilderness in northern Wisconsin and just make sure nobody was cutting the trees.
Sure. So he knew the woods better than almost anyone, probably just as a result of that.
Yeah, in the early days, timber cruisers, land surveyors, of which there were quite a few of those guys up in this area, Gene, one of the more notable ones, they spent a lot of time in the woods, and they definitely knew it like the back of their hand.
So, Keith Ulig, I wanted you to, if you could tell us a little bit about your reporting. So, you did a story. I was an editor on the story. Everyone should look it up. Hodag, the outlandish story of Wisconsin's mythical beast on its 125th birthday. And you wrote that after this beast was sort of first premiered, that newspapers across the country, such as the Philadelphia Inquirer, reported about the Hodag as if it were real. And that, this is your line, a newly powerful national news media spread the story around the country, almost like a social media story spreads today. So I think a lot of people think that that's actually what one of the things that Gene Shepard was up to with this story. But tell us more about that and how the news helped sort of feed these tales of the Hodag.
So the news at that time, newspapers at that time often had pages that were a lot like National Enquirer is today, but it was like a page in the middle of the paper. So there'd be a variety of news, you know, straight news and then sort of this outlandish news. And what happened with Shepard's story is that, and I can't say this for sure, I'm not an authority on this, but what it seems like is that this story landed on those pages, but a lot of people believed it. And that would have been something, when I spoke with Lenwood Sharp, he was a folklorist, that would have been something like a person in Philadelphia would have found to be infinitely believable. This was at the time where the theory of evolution was being parsed. Newly species were being discovered in America and South America. It was an age of discovery.
And this was like a wild place. This was the frontier.
This
who knows
was,
what's in
yeah,
the north?
Who knows what, you know, Eugene Shepard probably didn't even know all of the species that were in northern Wisconsin. So it seems reasonable that there could have been a Hodag-like creature in the Northwoods of Wisconsin.
So, you know, I looked up the 1893 newspaper story that first mentions Hodag in print. And I, first of all, I love it. It has a little illustration labeled the Black Hodag. Drawn by Shepard. And there, so there are two quick things I found notable. The first is that the byline on the story is it says by the Snake Editor. And I just like the idea that Snake Editor could have plausibly been a newspaper position. But the second thing is that the first words in the first ever mention of the Hodag go like this. Since the Hodag was seen the other day, there has been considerably many hunters out, all aspiring to catch one, to capture one. And so to me, that it's introduced almost as if the reader would have knowledge of this. And yeah, oh right, yeah, I heard about that since the other day. And now there's a bunch of hunters out. Cary Bladorn, would readers have been confused by this, or would a local audience have actually have heard these stories, or is this just a convention of the time? Like, how would it have been received?
Well, in the Rhinelander area in particular, with the lumber camps, telling of verbal tales, lumberjack tall tales, was tradition that went back all the way to the first tree cut down in Maine and kind of moved its way across Michigan and Wisconsin and then into Minnesota. So I think the local people at the time may have at least been intrigued enough to enjoy its entertainment value. Toward the end of the lumber era, even at that time, people had made the comment that the timber industry was inexhaustible. There was going to be enough trees in northern Wisconsin to cut for eternity. And I think Gene saw the trees falling with ever greater speed and efficiency, and noticed that we're not going to have the timber industry up here. And a part of that was Gene wanting to develop a tourist-type industry in the Northwoods to take over after that. Gene, for a while, had owned a resort up on Ballard Lake, which is near Star Lake in northern Wisconsin. And so that kind of spurred his desire to get people to come up to the Northwoods.
So we're going to talk about the legacy of the Hodag and where the Hodag is today. But at that time, did that work? I mean, so we can say it worked in 2018, right? There's a whole industry.
It certainly did work in that moment. Like Keith had mentioned, word traveled far and wide, and next thing you know, there's a Smithsonian Institute scientific team that they're about to dispatch to Rhinelander. Also, a gentleman out in New York State by the name of Phineas T. Barnum, who owned a circus in those days. You might be familiar with his name. He also decided to come up to Rhinelander to investigate this creature, which would have been right up his alley. And these teams, the Smithsonian team allegedly came up, and Mr. Barnum came up, and Gene had done a pretty good job with his beast that he had set up at his residence called the Pines. And after having displayed it at Oneida County's first fair in 1896, you know, the hype around it was such that it absolutely could have been believable. And like you guys mentioned, people weren't quite sure what was lurking around the Northwoods of Wisconsin in those early days. It was really the Wild West of the Midwest.
And you have to admire the imagery and the emphasis on its foul odor and everything else. And I definitely want to get into that that Oneida County Fair. You are listening to Route 51. I'm Rob Menser of USA Today Network, Wisconsin, here to explore the history of Rhinelander's mythical Hodag with Cary Bladorn of the Rhinelander Pioneer Park Historical Complex and reporter Keith Ulig. And we've got room for your questions as well. Join us by calling 800-780-9742, 800-780-9742. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the history of the horrible Hodag with Rhinelander historian Cary Bladorn and reporter Keith Ulig. I'm Rob Menser of USA Today Network, Wisconsin, in for Glenn Moberg. Do you have questions about the Hodag and its history? We want to hear from you. Call 800-780-9742 with your questions about Hodag folklore. So, gentlemen, when it comes to the spectacle surrounding the Hodag, we have to talk about this 1896 Oneida County Fair. Keith, you wrote about this in your story. Take us there. Tell us what Shepard devised for this first ever county fair in Rhinelander.
So Shepard was like an original movie special effects artist. He set up this he and a friend of his made a stuffed beast using real skin and using – he made it smell bad. They used fire and lighting. And what they did was they set it in a tent further back for the safety of people coming in. And they rushed them through because – and people had to be quiet too because you didn't want the Hodag to get all ruffled. Meanwhile, his two sons were off to the side making movements, making sounds. So basically what Shepard did is he hit all the senses. He hit, you know, smell, sight, sound, sort of the feel and everything about it. And I think partly people were sort of getting keyed up even before they would go in. And he figured out what grabbed people's attention. And he just used that to the fullest.
Gene, having spent a lot of time in lumber camps and telling tall stories, he really had a penchant for exaggeration and showmanship, and he really was an essential kind of Carnival Barker-esque kind of guy. And so you can imagine him standing outside a tent at the fair calling people in to come check out this magnificent creature he had discovered and captured in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, and it was convincing.
He'd hone his performances. You know, that's what he would do in those lumber camps. You can imagine that audience probably was pretty critical. So he figured out how to connect with people and what worked and what didn't through the years.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned P.T. Barnum, right? I mean, there's also like, you know, I imagine myself going to the Oneida County Fair in 1896 and like, I know it's not really real, but there's something really, you kind of want to be drawn into that. That's sort of, raconteurs through history, right?
Exactly. At the museum in Rhinelander at the historical complex, it being one of the oldest logging museums of its kind on the planet, I tend to try to carry on this tradition, this oral tradition of the lumber camp and telling the tale as if it's real, as if it's believable. And I just can't get myself to do anything other than that.
I want it to be real.
Sure.
I want to find – I would – man.
I mean, let's talk about what's real. In this day and age, I think Gene was onto something. What is real is more and more relative every day, it seems. And so – it's as real as it needs to be. And my favorite thing about the Hodag story is that it really has become its own institution, if you will. It's fluid. The story gets told hundreds of thousands of times every year, I'm sure. And every telling gets a little bit of a change here and there. People can add a little bit to it here and there. And that really carries on that lumberjack and that Gene Shepard tradition.
Keith, in your reporting, there's some sort of Arizona connection, right? Or we know it's traveled as far as that.
Right. One of the things that I found was that in Prescott, Arizona, there was a baseball team that's called the Hodags. And I was reading accounts about the Hodag in Prescott, Arizona in the early 1900s as if it were real there too. Different, not a woods animal, but a but, you know, a beast that would take sheep or livestock.
Sure. Actually, you know, can we just to back up for just a moment, can you talk a little bit about your, you know, what your reporting was? Say a little bit about some of the sources that you looked into. We've talked about these old newspaper pieces, but say a little bit more about some of the good Hodag sources.
Well, so this basically, I just started Googling it. I got the idea because I thought it was like an internet sensation 100 years before the internet, and I was looking at what Carrie was talking about, what's real and what doesn't, what clicks with people, what grabs their attention. So I started Googling around, and then basically you just go up to Rhinelander and start talking to people about the Hodag. And that is about the easiest thing in the world to do. Some of the funniest things are we had people that did not want to go on the record because it's like, ugh, not the Hodag again.
Enough with the Hodag.
It was cool at first, but I'm a bit overwhelmed. And that person did not want to be named.
they're afraid of their neighbors finding out that they're anti-Hodag.
But it's everywhere. They're, in front of a church, we found a little tile with a pictograph Hodag. There's Hodag statues. There's a Hodag store, which was unfortunately closed on the day we were there. But it just took a day to go up there and just find people who were interested, engaged. One of the things that I found was the book by Kurt Kortenhoff, Long Live the Hodag. I called Kurt. He's a historian in Minnesota. He grew up in Three Lakes, and his book is called Long Live the Hodag, The Life and Legacy of Eugene Simeon Shepherd. And it's a biography of Shepherd, but it also gives just a great readable account about life in the North Woods and the timber industry and the way our state was developed, particularly in the North.
Right.
There are a lot of books about the Hodag, quite a few children's books. Long Live the Hodag by Kurt Kortenhoff is, I'd say, the quintessential research document, just ahead of Keith's article from
story,
a couple weeks
excellent.
Back. He really did a phenomenal job.
Is that the truth? Is that the truth, or is this more of the – this is Shepherd coming out in
No, I mean, there has been a lot written about the Hodag, and I think you did a great job with that piece, Keith.
Thank you.
So, and you can join us at 800-780-9742. Ask us your Hodag questions or share your Hodag encounters. So Shepherd was a fascinating guy. We sort of talked. He's sort of this classic American frontier story of a guy who had nothing and made something for himself. But I guess like a lot of these stories, there's also a dark side.
It is said that Gene had earned and lost several fortunes throughout his lifetime. So you can kind of guess the rise and fall of his life and coming into lots of money and spending lots of money frivolously. And that coupled with some drinking throughout his life kind of ended in not so good light for him within the community toward the end of his life when he died. Maybe you can expound on that a little more, Keith.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that. He did an amazing thing here, but he had demons in his life. What do we know about Gene Shepherd?
He did some pretty awful things. There's allegations that he was physically abusive to his wife and kids.
In court documents, right?
Yeah. He was divorced. It just seemed one of my sources was named Jerry Shadell. He's a former mayor of Rhinelander, and he portrayed Shepherd. And he told in a play. I'm sorry. Yes. And he told me that Shepherd's highs were really high, his lows were really low, and he exhibited all the signs of bipolar, a mental illness. And if you read Kortenhoff's book about some of the things he did, how he tricked friends and wrought havoc on their relationships, for example, you can easily see that. And he did things that were kind of unexplainable, a little crazy. The yacht building, maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Carrie.
Yeah, some local people might be familiar with the Antigo-Rhinelander rivalry football game called the Bell Game. Gene, aside from the Hodag, had tons of pranks. He had a muskie out at his resort that he could make jump out of the water on command. He found perfumed moss in the woods that he would sell. He had other stories of other creatures like a side hill gouger that lived on a hill and it could only walk around the hill one way because its outside legs were longer than its inside legs. Also birds that laid square eggs so they wouldn't roll down hills, that sort of
thing.
That
would be convenient. That's a good idea.
Gene had a lot of stories like that. And you know, the flip side of that coin is that he also had some struggles in his life. I think he really fits the bill of eccentric genius in a lot of regards. And thankfully for Rhinelander, because he put a lot of effort into raising awareness about the community and what it had to offer. A little bit more about that. In 1918 is the earliest that I can find of the Hodag being used as the Rhinelander mascot. To go back to the Bell game, Gene had built a huge boat that he had put on Boom Lake on the Wisconsin River, and it drew so much water he couldn't get it off the mooring. So there it sat for decades and rotted on the mooring, and just about the time when it sank, somebody rescued the ship's bell, and it was put in a barn at Gene's property, the Pines, and in the 1950s, somebody went in there and rescued it. I believe the gentleman's name was Jack Corey, was a local Rhinelander newspaperman, and that is how the Rhinelander-Antigo rivalry bell game was started, and they're still fighting over that bell to this very day.
That's the bell?
And
who's got the bell?
I believe Antigo does, and I won't stick it to the Hodags. They definitely fight hard for it every year.
Oh, sure. Well, and so Carrie, let's talk a little bit about your work with the Pioneer Park Historical Complex. I know it's closed for the season right now. It's a summer. It's open during the summer, but can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be interested in the Hodag, the role that the Hodag plays in the Pioneer Park Historical Complex, and sort of your work there?
Yeah, I've always had always enjoyed local history, Wisconsin history, and I've been living in the Rhinelander area for over a decade. And opportunity came up at the local museum, Pioneer Park Historical Complex. They were looking for a new manager at the museum, and so I took that opportunity, and it's been absolutely wonderful. It's a privilege to be able to oversee the things going on down at the museum. Aside from the logging museum, there are also other entities within the property, Train Depot Museum, Sawmill Museum, One Room Rural Schoolhouse Museum, and a couple other museums, one of the most complete civilian conservation corps museums in the country. And all that kind of is tied into Rhinelander's forestry industry over the many decades. And along with the logging museum, we do have featured quite a few of Hodag specimens, a couple of the oldest Hodag specimens you can find in town. But that's not to undermine the rest of the community. Just about any establishment you walk into in Rhinelander, you'll find depictions of the Hodag, a sculpture here, a painting there, all over town, everywhere you drive. And if you start a business in Rhinelander these days, it's really not hard to pick a name. If you can start an auto dealership, it could be Hodag Auto Sales or something along those lines. So it really has manifested itself in every aspect of the community, including the museum.
I learned about Mishapishu from Brian Deal, who owns Deal Insurance Group. And our photographer, TZ Khan, and I just walked into the insurance office because they had a statue of the Hodag out it. And Brian said, "Oh, come on in. Let me show you this. Let me tell you this." It was really, really funny and cool.
Yeah, there are some people that I think feel a little bit broken record, like, about the Hodag. But for the most part...
Yeah, there's more to Rhinelander than the Hodag kind of thing.
But for the most part, in my experience, vast majority of the community really embraces the Hodag. They really love it. Not too long ago, there was some talk around town of kind of refocusing the tourist industry efforts on other aspects of the community. I mean, there are wonderful bike trails, hiking trails, the rivers, thousands of lakes in Oneida County and around the surrounding area, kind of changing that focus away from the Hodag. And there was quite an uproar within the community that, we don't really have to do that. We can keep playing this out. And it's been playing out for over 100 years and has become, I think, one of the best marketing ploys known to man.
So when people come, I mean, I really want to know, like, do people come from from miles around to see the Hodag? Is it mostly Wisconsin people who are visiting? Are people wanting to, research this this beast? Or tell me about the visitors.
This year alone at the museum, we had people from 38 states and over 22 different countries. So they come from all over the world. And when you come to Rhinelander, of course, you see this beast all over the place. You want to know more about it. And it doesn't take long before you find yourself down at the museum asking more questions about it. And since we have such a wonderful display down at Pioneer Park Historical Complex, we're happy to share the tale.
I want to talk about the logging history. I mean, that's part of what the museum shows, and it's a big part of this story as well. So we alluded to this or mentioned that Gene Shepard had sort of seen the future, you know, had an idea that the timber industry would not last forever. So this is 1893 that he came up with this story. Where, Carrie, were we in the, you know, sort of history of the timber industry, and when did it – how long did it last? You know what I mean? Like, what was the decline like?
Some of the first logging that was done in the area was done in the 1870s in – excuse me, 1860s in the Eagle River area. A young man by the name of Joshua Fox had been commissioned to build a tote road from Merrill, Wisconsin, which was then known as Jenny, to Eagle River. And once they completed that tote road, which was really just a path big enough to pull a two-wheel oxen cart down, that's really kicked off the timber industry in our area. And lots of different lumber companies invested time and manpower into the Northwoods. And now, the Northern Highland region, which is the area surrounding Rhinelander, was just covered in old-growth timber. I used to use the word primeval forest. That, I think, gives not the best depiction, because you imagine, you know, dinosaurs and thousands of years old trees. White pine tree, which is one of the older living trees in this area, a lot of times they're on the higher end, they'll be 500-600 years old. But this produced some enormous trees. There's some records from the original survey from the Rhinelander area that talks about trees averaging in the 50-inch diameter range, which is a giant white pine tree over 100 feet tall. So there was a couple things going on in our country at that time. People were moving west, and with westward expansion, people needed building materials, something that we had a lot of in northern Wisconsin that they don't have out on the plains, trees. So it was kind of a quick game to cut as much down as they could as quickly as possible to make money. And because of that, it didn't take long before that old growth forest was depleted. And by the 1910s and 20s, they were really kind of getting toward the end of that, and they started to change their minds about the timber industry as far as lumber is concerned, and started to switch over to more paper-producing products. And that's where Wisconsin gets its wonderful paper industry history from.
You know, I don't think I knew that. So the point was that the white pine, that was really about, like, building houses.
Well, I mean, just using wood as a material. Yeah. In those days, there's no plastics, that sort of thing. So wood, very
building material, yeah, as opposed to paper, which takes different wood.
Yeah, hardwoods, you make lumber out of hardwoods or pine, and a lot of times they'll use softwoods for the papermaking process. Also, softwoods tend to grow a lot faster. You can grow popple trees in about 40, 50, 60 years, then use them for papermaking. It takes, you know, more than 100 years to produce fine quality lumber pines. And that wasn't something that these timber industry guys were willing to wait around for. So after the trees were cut, leaving less than 6% of all those old-growth trees in northern Wisconsin, they hightailed it out of here. They moved to Minnesota, they set up companies there, and eventually made their way out to the Pacific Northwest, where they're still cutting their big trees down to date.
Keith Ulig, what surprised you the most as you were reporting this story, or what did you learn that you didn't know about the history of the Hodag and the history of Northwoods, Wisconsin?
I think what surprised me the most is how utterly modern Shepard was and sophisticated he was in his entire – I mean, it was a marketing scheme, and it was brilliant. It still works today with very little changing, really. And I think that's what – you know, I'm just so impressed with his intellect and his sort of performance level, but also just the way he could look ahead and understand what people would react to.
That's true. Carrie Bladorn, what's your favorite of the Hodag sites, statues? Where are the best Hodags in town?
Well, we happen to have some taxidermic representations at the Pioneer Park Historical Complex that were done by some taxidermists, and they look kind of like you might find a real Hodag. And those are some of my favorites. There's also a couple of papier-mâché created specimens down in the museum that are over 100 years old. But really, that's one of the wonderful things about the Hodag, is that there's a little bit of leeway with its depiction. And you get some artists that hear the story, People that want to kind of devise their own look for the Hodag, and they're free to do so. And over many decades, you get a lot of different kind of looks of the Hodag. Originally, Gene had noted the Hodag was covered in black shaggy fur, and that's kind of moved into a green-looking Hodag. There's also some talk from Gene that female Hodags were white with black spots. I haven't ever seen one of those in the wild, but I will keep my eyes peeled. So lots of different depictions of the Hodag, and that's one thing that makes it so great.
What do we know about how the Hodag developed a taste for the white bulldog?
There are a lot of different stories surrounding the Hodag. Tales surrounding Gene's initial capturing of it. There are a couple different versions. I should say hundreds of different versions. But they all find they all kind of ride the same line at any rate.
What's with the odor? Why does the Hodag smell so bad? That's what I want to know.
Just a part of the lumberjack tall tale tradition that Gene had of embellishing stories. You know, any way he could put an image in your mind, that was part of that.
And I get the, on newspapers.com, looking through old clips. There was one that I came across out of Stevens Point in the early 1900s, early 20th century, that it was like the society page, you know, where they would report on Mrs. Johnson stayed with whoever on this day. And somebody just put into that column a little item about how out hunting they had captured some wild name. And then upon further inspection, it turned out to be the species known as the Hodag. And that didn't come from Gene Shepard. That didn't come from Rhinelander even. That was just somebody having fun with putting a crazy story into the newspaper. So I want to know, I want to talk a little bit about, the Hodag in culture, but I want to know, Carrie, as a Rhinelander resident, how many Hodag tchotchkes do you personally own? I have to know this.
Well, I'm a little bit, I have a little bit of an obsession with the Hodag, and I have a lot of them. Everything from Hodag snow globes to Hodag. I got a Hodag on my keychain. You know, so I've really, really embrace that. We have a lot of gifts down at the museum. There's a newer place in Rhinelander called the Hodag Store, run by a gentleman named Ben Brunel, and it's a brightly green painted building. You can't miss it when you drive downtown, and he's doing a great job at kind of providing lots of different little Hodag souvenirs and novelties.
Excellent. You are listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We have a trailer for an upcoming film that listeners may be interested in.
A creature so fearsome, so grotesque, so horrible, so rancid, so smelly. No one wants to walk in the woods at night in northern Wisconsin. But coming this summer, Revenge of the Hodag.
Way up north in the white pine woods where the swamps are all around, there's a creature that moves way back in the hills and its lair cannot be found. It moves through the trees like a whispering death. There ain't no place to hide. When the full moon sails over Rhinelander, the town folks stay inside.
Hodag always hungry, Hodag gobbling down, Hodag getting bigger, yeah, Hodag getting round.
Hodag get behind you and it never make a sound.
You are listening to Route 51. I'm Rob Menser of USA Today Network Wisconsin, here to explore the history of Rhinelander's mythical Hodag with Carrie Bladorn of the Rhinelander Pioneer Park Historical Complex and reporter Keith Ulig. And there's room for your questions as well. You can join us by calling 800-780-9742, 800-780-9742. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. So We're talking about the Hodag, the 7-foot-long mythical beast invented in Wisconsin, and how it went from a lumberjack's tall tail to the official mascot of Rhinelander. Do you have questions about the Hodag and its history? If you're in the Rhinelander area, we want to hear what the Hodag means to you. 800-780-9742. So even today, the Hodag is one of Wisconsin's best-known mythical creatures, and it has made a lot of pop cultural appearances. In 2017, no less than one J.K. Rowling added the Hodag to her Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them guidebook of magical creatures, which means the Hodag is real within the Harry Potter universe. And the Hodag has been the subject of a Scooby-Doo cartoon in the episode The Hodag of Horror.
Like, meet the Hodag, number one attraction of Gene Shepard's traveling cabinet of curiosities.
That can't be the thing that attacked Daisy. It's so fake.
The Hodag is a master of deception, lulling its victims into a false sense of security before attacking.
Yeah, right.
What's in the high security box, Mr. Shepard?
Something very, very valuable. I only open that box once a year.
Like, why?
It needs to breathe! You dimwit. Mwah.
Huh? Oh man, the Scooby Gang is in trouble now. But there's more to pop cultural Hodags. There is the Rhinelander native Jill Kuzmarski, who has written a series of children's books based around Happy the Hodag. I think Happy the Hodag does not smell like rotting meat. Probably it's just based on the depiction, at least. Definitely cuter than some of the other Hodags. For those who like role-playing games, the UW Stevens Point professor Tim Krause created the Dungeons & Dragons adventure called On Wisconsin that features the Hodag. And there's the Hodag Country Festival in Rhinelander, this big country music event. It's the Rhinelander High School mascot. And there's even a Hodag store, Carrie, as you mentioned. I want to talk a little bit more. You said that there was a discussion of changing trying to market Rhinelander around some non-Hodag themes. At the same time, this is the most visible, most recognizable thing that probably many people know about Rhinelander. I want to say a little bit more about how that perception works. Keith, you mentioned that you talked to some people who didn't give their names, who were hesitant to criticize the Hodag. What about others? I mean, there are a lot of people who are quite happy to be associated with the Hodag. Just in general, what did you encounter?
I think if you're from a small town in northern Wisconsin, you might be used to being ignored a little bit. We're in Wisconsin in the center of the country, and, you know, in pop culture terms, it's the coast, right? And then in the Northwoods, it gets a little, you get even more sort of isolated. And I think because it sets that place apart, people really can glom onto that. One of the sources that I talked to said that she was visiting a daughter in Seattle and she was wearing a Hodag sweatshirt and somebody came up to her and talked to her about Rhinelander. That's pretty cool. And I think most people can relate to that in Rhinelander and beyond. It's just one of those things that it sort of sets Wisconsin apart from the crowd. It might even, like a cheesehead does. The Hodag is part of our culture.
It really has become an iconic figure and an economic driving force. The Hodag, its tail, the stories, and its environs, the Wisconsin River, the many lakes and beautiful forests in our area, bring thousands of people to the area every year and brings millions of dollars to the area too. So that can't be understated. Hodag really has developed into its own institution. And is the Hodag real? For many, many thousands of people across the world, it certainly is.
The other thing, though, I think unlike some other mythical beasts. I do think it's unusual that the Hodag is so tied to a place, right? So there's Bigfoot is in a lot of places, Pacific Northwest and wherever, and some, you know, your Phoenix or some of your other mythical beasts. There's people know the story, they recognize the character, but this one is very place bound, and I think that's unusual. And again, I mean, maybe it's just as you said, it's a testament to Shepherd's sort of marketing talents. But is that as unusual as I think?
Well, as a community that wants to publicize itself and get people to come to the area, it's just a prime example of one of those things. It hasn't lost its entertainment value for over 100 years. People still want to come and investigate. And as far as its specificity to Rhinelander itself, the community has taken ownership of the Great Pine Beast. It's their mythological creature. And that's not to say that the Hodag's historic ranges don't reach farther north and farther south at some point in history. But for the most part, it is very Rhinelander-oriented.
I wonder if it's because it was... Shepherd admitted it was a, you know, I don't want to use the word hoax, because I think he was doing it as if it weren't real altogether. But if people want to believe it, go ahead.
Sure.
But I think it's because he came out and admitted it, and that made headlines and news.
Oh, sure.
As well. When it, you know, yeah, it's revealed as a hoax. And I think people kind of are attracted to that idea that it could he could take something that's completely made up and make it into a sensation.
And even though you know the truth, if you're out in the woods and you're surrounded by giant white pine trees and you're looking down the trail, you almost get the sensation that there could be Hodags lurking about.
Keith, your story was part of our USA Today Network Wisconsin series called Be Wisconsin. Which I am an editor on the series of stories. And the idea is to have stories about experiences or people or things that are in some way quintessentially Wisconsin. Is that true of Eugene Shepherd? Is there something quintessentially Wisconsin about him as a character?
I argue yes. I think that a lot of the Wisconsin culture comes from a farm culture and comes from those lumber camps. Work hard, play hard. A sense of fun, making fun of ourselves. Talk about cheeseheads again, you know. I think it is. And also, you know, I think that in terms of like the sort of can-do attitude, again, of farmer and lumberjacks, that's something that's sort of inbred in us. And we really, really respect somebody who makes his own way and figures it out and is smart, you know, and figures out things. So I argue, yeah.
Yeah, Gene could have just kept that story in the lumber camp or around the campfire at his house, but instead he chose to take the Hodag in his story and use it and market it for the good of his community. And I think that embodies a lot of places in Wisconsin and peoples that enjoy their communities and want people to come experience it for themselves.
So the Pioneer Park Historical Complex, it opens on Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah, Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, I believe it's May 28th or 29th.
So look, that's like feels like maybe a long time. Here we are in late December, but people can mark their calendars. Are there particular events or the, you know, sort of best times to come and see the park?
The museum is open Memorial Day through Labor Day and on weekends through September. But there are a lot of places in Rhinelander you can see the Hodag. There is wonderful painting down at the courthouse. There is a huge display at the City of Rhinelander Chamber of Commerce. Any tavern or restaurant you go into downtown is going to have some effigy of the creature. And so don't let the museum being closed stop you. Come on up to Rhinelander and check out the Hodag.
All right. That's all the time we have for today on Route 51. Keith Ulick's story is called Hodag, the outlandish story of Wisconsin's mythical beast on its 125th birthday. Look it up. It's a great read. Carrie Bladorn is the coordinator of Pioneer Park Historical Complex in Rhinelander. So mark your calendar and visit Rhinelander, even if it's not in the summer. Thanks so much to both of you for joining us here in the studio. Thank you to Joy Ratch-Kramer for on-air production. Rick Ryer is our executive producer and today's board operator. Special music today from Sean McBurney and the Slight Exaggerations, Lefty LaRue, and Meet Raffle Road. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. I'm Robert Menser of USA Today Network, in for Glenn Moberg. Next week, Rick Ryer will discuss the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra's 70th anniversary season with Executive Director Mara Prausa and Music Directors Dr. Patrick Miles and Dr. Andres Moran. Until then, we're heading out of town.